Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is the Cure Panel Talk Show, and this is Shahrukh Khan, your host for the day. We're very excited to have our fifth talk on yoga and its effects on health and wellness. We've had leading researchers such as Dr. Sadhvir Khalsa of Harvard University discuss the research being done in his lab using yoga as a therapy for different conditions and evaluating its benefit using clinical research studies. We had David Emerson from the Justice Resource Institute talk about his experience of using yoga to treat patients with trauma. Then we had Dr. Larry Payne, who was talking about yoga and for people in their 50s and beyond. And the last episode, we actually had a discussion with Dr. Carol Horton and yoga for myeloma patients and how the practice of yoga can really help them with their cancer diagnosis and treatments. We're very excited to have our first show of 2014, and we have a very distinguished expert, Dr. Richard Miller, and four panelists will be joining us on an exciting discussion on the application of yoga nidra for post-traumatic stress disorder. Towards the end of the show, we'll be addressing questions sent in by our listeners, and at any point our audience wants to ask a question towards the end, they can press one on their keypad and we'll bring them online. So with that, let me jump on to introducing our expert for the day. Unfortunately, Priya Menon, our host for Cure Panel, she couldn't join us today because she's having internet and connectivity issues in India. She dials in from India, but I'm stepping in for her, and I'm very excited to introduce Dr. Miller, who is a PhD in clinical psychology. He is an author, researcher, and yogic scholar, and the founding president of the Integrative Restoration Institute, and the co-founder of the International Association of Yoga Therapists, and the founding editor of the Professional Journal of IAYT, which is the International Association of Yoga Therapists. Dr. Miller has worked with Walter Reed Army Medical Center and the United States Department of Defense studying the effect of eye rest, which is the short form of integrative restoration, the practice that utilizes yoga nidra techniques for restoration and deep relaxation. The IRS protocol was and is continuing to be used with soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan suffering from PTSD. Based on this work, Eric Schumacher, Surgeon General of the United States Army, endorsed yoga nidra as a complementary alternative medical practice for chronic pain in 2010. IRS is currently supporting active duty veterans, active duty personnel, veterans, and families of service members in over 30 VA or military settings across the United States. Dr. Miller and his organization have established IRS programs at various military sites, homeless shelters, prisons, hospices, universities, chemical dependency programs, mental health treatment centers, rehabilitation and treatment centers for multiple sclerosis and cancer outpatient clinics. In addition, they have also brought this technique for preschool children and other yoga and meditation studios. IRS Yoga Nidra is one of the principal programs that are offered by his institution, and we are very excited that Dr. Miller will be joining us and discussing the specifics of this program. And in addition to Dr. Miller, we have four panelists which we'll be introducing one by one as we go through the show, and we're very excited for them, excited that they're joining us, and we hope for a very fruitful discussion. With that, Dr. Miller, you're on air. Kindly introduce yourself. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Shuri. That was a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much.
We're really excited to have you, and I'm personally, myself, been practicing yoga for almost a decade now, and so I'm really interested in hearing about yoga nidra. So let me begin the show by actually, we'll start with a few questions, and then I'll bring on the panelists one by one, and then we can further discuss the topic before throwing the talk to audiences. So with that, let's just begin with you telling us a little bit about the details of Yoga Nidra, what it is, because we've all heard the word in our own yoga practices and in meditation practices, but exactly in your context what it means, how you define it, and then we can talk about how you are applying it as part of the IRIS program.
Absolutely, I'd be delighted to. From my perspective, the word yoga for me means our experiencing in our body, not just in our mind, but as a physical experience, our interconnectedness with the entire universe. So do we feel our non-separateness from all of life, that we feel how we're each a unique expression of life, and the approaches of yoga help us, one, feel very connected with ourselves, with others in our relationships, and with the world around us. Nidra is a particular word that actually means sleep in the Sanskrit, but within the context of yoga nidra, it means a changing state of consciousness. So that could anything be from waking state to dream to sleep, but it could also be a changing state like happiness, sadness, anger, or it could represent a changing state of circumstance, like someone is in good health, then perhaps they're in poor health, or they have cancer or post-traumatic stress, or some other issue that they're facing in their life. So when we put yoga and nidra together as two terms, it actually means to feel that sense of connectedness with yourself, with the world around you, no matter the circumstance that you're experiencing. So yoga for me, experientially and personally, as well as the way I teach it, helps us feel a sense of peace and equanimity, a deep inner sense of well-being, no matter the state of mind or body we may be experiencing. And it's one of the reasons I feel it's so successful with everything from anxiety to post-traumatic stress to helping people sleep, but also people who are wishing to develop a sense of well-being in their life, or in the ultimate sense of yoga nidra and yoga to awakening to the sense of our non-separateness with all of life. It helps us feel a deep sense of integration and wholeness no matter our circumstance or our situation that we're facing in life moment to moment. The practice of eye rest as a form of yoga nidra developed when I first started experiencing yoga nidra back in 1970. I was given it in my first yoga class at the Integral Yoga Institute in San Francisco, and at the end of our first class, the teacher gave us a short form of what I now know as yoga nidra, and I had a most profound personal transformational experience where I felt this deep core sense of well-being and a sense of connectedness. When I walked out that night after class, I really felt myself as an expression of the universe. And I had a spontaneous vision and vow that came to me that night as I walked home, which is I wanted to spend my life understanding this process and this teaching of yoga and yoga nidra. And so I began teaching it in my classes when I was became a yoga teacher in 1973, and slowly developed it over years as a more secular form from the one that I had originally learned that had its roots in India, where it came to us in the West with much of the cultural heritage of India, the different archetypal imagery and visions and colors. And so I started inviting people in the practice to really inquire into their own body and their own mind and feel what they were experiencing. And slowly the practice developed for me as a very secular practice that I was able then to take out and bring to populations in homeless shelters and different centers, as well as the yoga population. And then in 2004, we were invited to take part in a study at Walter Reed Army Medical Center with wounded warriors who were coming back from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they actually asked us when we started the study to let go of the name Yoga Nidra because they didn't know what to do with the name, and so they asked me to rename it. And much to my surprise, in contemplating how do I rename a 4,000-year-old practice, I didn't feel that I was I should do that, but they wanted me to do it. So I came up with the name Integrative Restoration. Integrative because I think the practice of yoga and yoga nidra helps integrate us so that we become a whole healthy human being, and restorative because it restores that sense of wholeness and connectedness both within ourselves and to the world around us. And the Army loved that name, very secular name, and I called it iRest because back in 2004 everything was iPad or iPhone, and so I thought I for integrative and rest for restoration, which the Army loved. And then after a couple of years, because we were so successful in our work with soldiers and veterans, they said that they were happy for us to now call it Yoga Nidra. So we keep the name Integrative iRest Yoga Nidra mainly because we've done so much research to date, 17-plus studies showing the effectiveness of it, and it's a specialized, I would say, protocol of yoga nidra. So when people ask, do we teach or does a clinic teach yoga nidra, and they ask specifically for the iRest, we can tell them, yes, we do. So that's a little bit of the background.
Oh, you touched upon some really interesting points here. So I'm going to step back a little bit and actually delve into the 1963 class you mentioned that when you were actually introduced to yoga nidra. So just tell us a little bit about how did you actually get into the practice of yoga, and then what was that transformative vision that you had? I mean, in actual literal sense, what kind of transformative experience it was in terms of feelings, yeah, or emotions that evoked. It'd be very interesting to hear a little bit about that.
Well, the class was in 1970. I had recently arrived in San Francisco from the East Coast. I had driven across the country to settle in San Francisco, and I was wanting to meet people because I didn't know anybody in the city, and somebody suggested I take a yoga class, or I saw a flyer. It's forgotten to me now so many years ago, but I ended up signing up for this 12-week class, which actually is a funny story because they decided to teach the class in silence for the 12 weeks, so I came into the building and entered the building and left the building for 12 weeks in silence and never really met anybody, but I was introduced to the practice of yoga, and as I mentioned, it had a most transformative effect on me. And really what the transformation was from that very first practice, the meditation that they were teaching us, the asana that they were teaching us, the breathing practice that they were teaching with us, helped connect me to myself in a way that I had never been connected to myself before in my life. Growing up on the East Coast, I was not necessarily invited to get to know myself. And the practice of yoga nidra at the end was so deeply relaxing and restorative. I don't think I had ever felt that relaxed and at ease in my life. And it gave me a sense of wholeness, of interconnectedness with the entire universe, because I remember walking out that night, gazing up at the star, and I really had the feeling that I had no sense of separation from everything around me. I could feel an underlying essence of life, I call it, that lives me and lives the plants and the trees and the stars and the planets, and I could really feel that underlying essence. And during those 12 weeks, it kept reminding me and helping me experience that over and again. When I would leave the class over the subsequent days, it would kind of disappear. But then when I'd return to the yoga class, it would reinstate that. And so it really fired my imagination because it was such an experiential, I would say, somatic impact on my body and my mind. And I have always been, through college and afterwards when I came to San Francisco, a student of psychology, and I began to sense how yoga itself and the disciplines and yoga nidra as a particular application was helping me manage and welcome my emotions, help me become friendly with my body, with my thoughts, so that I was, felt like I was becoming an integrated human being, where I came to the practice, I would say, with a certain fragmentation from my background, a certain sense of isolation or separateness. The practice of yoga really helped heal all of that, and I would say brought me back to being a fully functional human being.
That's very interesting. And I mean, so is the sense of integration that you feel, can it be, is it what the Sanskrit phrase, I am the universe is me, is it the same sense of, you know, conveying the same sense of togetherness, of the non-separation from rest of the universe?
Exactly. So now, over the decades of practice, when I look at another person, when I look at a tree, when I look at any outside object, I see it in its outline form, and I can sense how it's separate from me, but there's another feeling tone that's there now, which is of no separation. I feel the underlying force from which I would say we all come from, and that accompanies me all day long. So, that sense of I am that and that I am is very much here with me moment to moment.
That's great. Okay, so going back to yoga nidra, so can you explain, like, what the iris technique is really and how it was applied in 2004, 2005 with the soldiers, and did you actually study the effects as a clinical research study with some scientific protocol behind it? Can you explain a little bit about that part of iris?
I've developed the approach from the classical yoga nidra that I learned first from Satyananda and then subsequently from the Bihar school, Satyananda's teachings, all that go back to the teachings of Shivananda from India. But I've also had a number of extraordinary teachers, both from India and from the West, who helped me develop the program. The way that I've formulated it is along the traditional lines, what they call the five koshas, or the five bodies that we tend to identify with, our body, senses, mind, emotions, thoughts. But I've also added an additional kosha, what I call the smitamaya, or the body of I-ness, and I'll explain that. So basically the protocol is 10 steps. The first step, any journey we take in life begins with an intention. So when we start our practice of yoga or yoga nidra, I ask people, what is their intention for practicing this? And I also ask them, what is their heartfelt, I call it heartfelt desire or mission in life? In other words, if we stop and really feel life is living us, that we are a unique each expression of life, that life is living us with a certain quality of purpose and meaning and value, can we get in touch with that? And I sense the intentions are things that we do, vows that we take in life, how we eat, how we live, how we work, how we relate to other people. These kind of intentions we have in our daily life help us recognize this deeper heartfelt mission, we might say, of value and purpose. So I start by helping people get in touch with that sense of life living them and their mission in life, the intentions that are helping them live into that heartfelt mission, and then I help them find an inner resource within themselves that I call well-being, some place within themselves where when they're in touch with it in their body, they have a sense of feeling secure, grounded, even safe. Because meditation, when we go deeply into meditation, it can invite to the surface of our consciousness deep emotions, deep thoughts, memories that can be disturbing at times. When we get into the deeper aspects of meditation and encounter the deeper formlessness and emptiness that meditation reveals, it can cause unsettlement in the body and the mind. So I want people to have a really good sense of well-being that they can contact at an instant's notice. So those first three components, the intention, the heartfelt mission, and the inner resource, form what we call the sankalpa that we begin with. Sankalpa is a beautiful Sanskrit word that means san, born from the heart, and kalpa infers time, but it means something that unfolds over time. So these three, as a sankalpa, are bottom-up processes. They're born from our heart that unfold over time as we grow into our intentions and manifest our deepest desires in life. Once we have those kind of in place, then the next phase of yoga nidra, we engage a very systematic body scan, starting in the mouth, ending in the feet, which follows a very traditional yogic Shavayatra meditation, 61-point meditation. But I've come to see neurologically we're actually tracing the motor sensory cortex in the brain as we do a sweep of body sensing from our mouth to our toes. And we do it very slowly, very systematically initially. Later on we can go very fast, but we're trying to set up a biofeedback so that we can deeply relax in just a few seconds once we really have it in place. And the body sensing gives way to the next form of the protocol, which is breath sensing. So we lead students or ourselves into different ways of working with the breath, sensing movements of energy in the body. I often give many different types of pranayama, alternate side of the body breathing, breath noting, breath counting, abdominal breathing. So we can weave into the practice all sorts of pranayamas that, depending on the person, can help them depending on whether they need to relax, whether they have asthma, post-traumatic stress. I've done a lot of research in respiration, so I try to teach these and weave them into the practice. When we breathe deeply and systematically over time, it releases the diaphragm. It helps bring forward emotions into the body. So the next component of yoga nidra is working and welcoming emotions and their opposites so that we're becoming very comfortable with our emotions. And I like to say that we're learning how to welcome all the different aspects of our body, mind, senses, and emotions and treating them as messengers. So when we have an emotion like sadness or grief or happiness or anger, I think of them as messengers that are giving us information for how we need to respond into the world, so that the emphasis in the way that I teach yoga nidra is not on trying to change our emotions or get rid of them, but really recognizing them, welcoming them in, and in a way dialoguing with them to see what's the action that they're asking us to take into the world. So if we're experiencing, say, a momentary aspect of anger, by dialoguing with it, we might feel a deeper sense where we might be feeling a sense of helplessness. And then we're looking at the actions that by taking them help us feel more empowered. The anger has served a purpose to help us find that action. It disappears and we're back into harmony with ourselves. As we're working with emotions, it's natural to begin to welcome the different thoughts and beliefs that are underlying our emotional life. And so the next component of yoga nidra is welcoming and working with beliefs, core negative beliefs, positive beliefs, thoughts, memories, images, that again, as we welcome and learn how to be with them, helps us restore our sense of integration with ourselves, and we feel that we can manage and be with our thoughts in any way that they come to us. And as we put into place body sensing, breathing, working with emotions, and welcoming thoughts, we feel that deeper sense of integration as a human being, it brings forward the next component of yoga nidra quite naturally, which is the sense of well-being and joy. So we spend time then during the practice inviting in joy, well-being, our ability to feel and encounter pleasure in our body, which many people who've had trauma or some form of post-traumatic stress often can't feel joy. So it's really nourishing joy, welcoming it into the body. And the last component of yoga nidra in the very classical form and the way that I offer it, we help ourselves experience ourselves as the witness of all of these changing circumstances of body, mind, senses, emotions, thoughts, and joy, so that we can feel ourselves as the witness of them, where we feel connected to them, but aware of them, so that we can step back and really inquire into ourselves as a witnessing presence, ultimately a sense of awareness, and come to understand that the sense of self, the sense of I-ness, is like everything else, a functioning that arises in response to the world. And we're able, in a way, to see that, step back from it, and in that moment of really feeling into this sense of being or witnessing awareness, it melts our sense of separation. We begin to feel not just connected to ourself, but to the entire universe. And in the depth of yoga nidra, we can contact this underlying essence that we all are born out of. I call it the mystery, for lack of a better word. But this that we all have come from, the planets, the entire universe, and we can feel ourselves very connected to that. And the final stage, we might say, of yoga nidra is then taking all of these understandings and integrating them back into our daily life, our relationships, the way we work in the world, so it becomes a very integrated practice that we take into our daily life. And so I think of yoga nidra as a complete form of meditation that is a practice of the way of living our life. So if we look at those 10 practices and look at them in the tradition of yoga nidra, we have the sankalpa, the intention, the body sensing, the breath sensing, working with the emotions, working with thoughts, working with joy, and recognizing our interconnected wholeness and non-separation with all of life, which we might call awakening to our true nature or a sense of enlightenment in the tradition of yoga.
Thank you so much for a very, very elaborate and clear understanding of this. This is really interesting. I'm going to get in the panelists, but I just wanted to make a comment. Have you been to Bihar itself? Have you been to the state of Bihar?
I haven't been to Bihar. I've been to Chennai. I've been to Bombay. I've been all over different parts of India, but I have yet to make it actually to Bihar. It's on my bucket list.
I was born 50 miles from the Bihar School of Yoga, so that's why
I
made that observation. Okay, I'm going to get our first panelist on air now. She is Marcella Clavio. She is a certified junior intermediate one Iyengar yoga teacher in New York City. And she's also my teacher. I'm very blessed and privileged to be able to attend her yoga classes. And she's a core faculty of the Iyengar Yoga Institute of New York. Her yoga training includes various trips to India where she studied with the Iyengar family. And she's also trained with Patricia Walden and Manusu Manos, who I believe is in San Francisco. Marcella is an ordained Tibetan Buddhist nun in the Saya tradition. She has completed various retreats here in the West and also abroad, and she leads these yoga and meditation retreats several times in the year. So with that, I'll request Marcella to come on air and ask her questions and discuss the topic with you. Marcella, you're on air.
Oh, thank you so much, Shari, and thank you also for Dr. Miller, your introduction and your explanation of the program was very, very enlightening. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And thanks, Shari, for having me on the show once again. These have really been very fruitful. And really, as a yoga practitioner and as a practitioner also of meditation and as a Buddhist nun, I'm really happy to participate in these dialogues, which really bring together and deepen our understanding of the effects of these disciplines on our life. So my question was, I think I'm going to try one question because I want everybody else on the panel to have their time, and then if there's more time, I'll come back to a second question, Dr. Miller.
Sure, wonderful.
I think I'll take my second question. It seems like Yoga Nidra seems to be a very comprehensive approach to meditation in the sense of learning to, as you say, handle and manage one's own experience.
Yes.
And in that way, it's a science, but it's also an art.
Correct.
And
yes.
It provides a framework or a map for understanding how you describe the nidra, which is shifts and subtle changes in the state of mind that occur within the practitioner as they're meditating. So my question was, if there are moments in a person's practice where they might go so deep that they are at the edge of their capacity to experience something in calm awareness, are there any practical steps to help them progress along their journey, do you teach any techniques for them to handle any signals that they receive from their body, which might be indicators of anxiety or fear or panic?
It's a wonderful question, Marcella, and you're absolutely right. It's very important, especially as we navigate into the deeper regions of meditation, and what I've often seen is yoga nidra as a particular application can take people very deep very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's very important to have the intention and the inner resource very well established. And what I like to do is weave a sense of inner resource throughout the practice so that as people are meditating, they keep in a way dipping back to a very grounded state of well-being and really anchoring into that. And then with each step that they take into the practice, they keep weaving back into that sense of ground. I also try to help people create what I call continuums of experience so that as they move into deeper regions, they're doing it in a way systematically, step by step, slowly. So for instance, if we're working with an emotion, I often have them put it on a continuum, and so there we're working with lesser emotions to get our capacity in place so that we can welcome and work with deeper emotions. Mm-hmm. Same thing with thoughts, beliefs, imagery. The sensation that we can often happen in deep meditation of coming into formlessness or qualities of emptiness or seeing through the sense of separation can take the breath away of a person, and I've certainly experienced that at many times. And so by having those earlier practices of well-being firmly established, knowing how to work with the breath, keep sensing the physical body in the midst of those experiences, helps create the ground to be able to tolerate those deeper experiences, as you are calling them out. I think also we can engage the practice in different durations. So we can do it in 5-minute, 10-minute, 20-minute, 30-minute, 40-minute segments so that we don't overwhelm the system at first.
Right.
I take a wonderful example from the teachings of Khalid Rinpoche, who is one of the Dalai Lama's teachers, who said, 7 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
7 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And my sense was he was really pointing out that, one, after 5 or 10 minutes, most people start to get distracted. So take a 5-minute meditation or a 15-minute meditation, then step back and incrementally learn how to tolerate, we might say, the deeper meditations that come with time, where when I first encountered some of these deep states of formlessness, I felt panic and anxiety. It felt fearful. I didn't know where it was going. It was disrupting how my mind held my concepts of what reality is. Luckily, I had teachers who were able then to talk with me, help me understand it, and then go back into the meditation. So I think it's also important to have a teacher, someone who's a guide, who's been there, so they know where we're going, where we are, and can help us kind of orient our mind to what's happening. So I think all of those things are instrumental and very important in building a practice of meditation. And yoga nidra can be a very deep form of meditation, so it's important to have those building blocks in place.
Yeah, that sounds really sound and very methodical and progressive. So thank you so much for that. One last question, because I fear I might not get a second go around. Do you have any podcasts in Spanish? I would be very.
We do. We actually have translated our practice into Spanish, French. We're getting it translated into German. We're having it translated into Arabic. And those are, if not yet, will soon be available on our website in those different languages.
We'll look for them. Thank you so much, Dr. Miller. What a pleasure to have spoken with you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marcella. I'm going to bring our second panelist, Dr. Miller, and she is Micheline, who is an oncology counselor at Life with Cancer. She is also licensed as a clinical social worker and is a registered yoga teacher and a certified end-of-life counselor at Life of Cancer, where she provides individuals, couples, and family counseling for cancer patients and their loved ones. She helped develop a 6-week mind-body education series, leads yoga and meditation classes for patients and caregivers, and facilitates support groups and speaks to community groups about issues related to cancer. She's got a particular interest in using mind-body practices to strengthen resiliency in cancer patients and their caregivers. With that, Micheline, you're on air. Please ask your questions from Dr. Miller.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay,
hi, Micheline.
Hi. Dr. Miller, let me just say it's such a pleasure to speak with you. I actually had a chance to take a workshop of yours 2 weeks ago in Washington, D.C. at the Yoga Symposium, which is a wonderful gathering. Goodness, this has all just been really, really rich for me this evening. I had a maybe sort of more specific question around your thoughts on any overlap between EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, which for listeners is a form of a protocol used for post-traumatic stress disorder. And as I've sort of experienced that and used that myself, I'm wondering if you can talk to any similarities between the bilateral stimulation that is used in that modality and what I experienced in yoga nidra in terms of, you know, cross-body first bringing attention to one side and then the other. I'm just wondering if there's any overlap there.
Sure. I'd love to speak to that. I was actually trained in the early days of EMDR, and my suite mate, Laurel Parnell, has written extensively in the field of EMDR. What I see is in bilateral stimulation, or let's go back a step. For me, every emotion, every thought, every object comes paired into existence with its direct opposite. So we have dark because we have light. We have sadness because we have happiness. So everything comes paired with its opposite. When we get stuck in one pole of an opposite, we can get frozen. And so by contemplating its opposite, we can sometimes liberate that energy that was frozen, unstick it, we might say, and reach an integration and a deeper understanding. In EMDR, when I was learning it, we were doing bilateral stimulation from one side of the body to the other, or moving the eyes from one side to the other, or sound from one ear to the other, or tapping one knee to the other. What I came to understand in Yoga Nidra is opposites don't necessarily lie on opposite sides of the body. We can have an opposite that are on opposite sides of the body, but we can also have them below or above one another, or we can have opposites enfolded one into the other. So when I have a person contemplate, say, a particular emotion or belief or sensation, and then I ask them to find its opposite, I'm always curious because they find it in different places in their body, and it might be in the same place as the one that they were contemplating as the opposite. So Yoga Nidra actually brings that bilateral stimulation, but when I think of bilateral, it can be left, right, front, back, inside, deep, superficial. It depends on the person and their unique experience. But ultimately, we find an integration and a deeper understanding that comes out of contemplating opposites. It's a very crucial aspect, I think, of meditation in general, and Yoga Nidra as a specific application of meditation.
Oh, thank you. That really enriched that for me. Thank you.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a clinical psychologist, and when I have practiced EMDR and integrated the Yoga Nidra into my EMDR practice, I often, instead of asking them to move their eyes, I just do what I do in Yoga Nidra. I ask them to feel whatever it is they're experiencing, their belief, memory, image, thought, emotion, or sensation. Feel into their body, and if it had an opposite, where might they find it in their body? And then to have them move bodily or somatically between the two opposites, first feeling one and then sensing its opposite. And I get that integration without necessarily having to move their eyes or tap with sounds or with somatic tapping.
Oh, beautiful. Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Dr. Miller, I would actually like to discuss this a little further. I myself have been giving a lot of thought on that emotions and come in pairs. And so question around this is, have you, through your meditation practices, been able to make a comprehensive list of all emotions and what pairs they come up with? And is there a mind-body map of which part of the body gets stimulated by which emotion? Just like we have a sensory map of the brain, of the body on the brain, is there a similar map that you have been able to develop or put together?
In a manner of speaking, yes, and in a manner of speaking, no. I find that if we look at the general population and say we take an emotion like happiness or sadness or grief or anger or any emotion, most people generally tend to experience it in similar places in their body, but there are so many people who experience it in other places of their body too, that I can't really say I could draw a map of emotions. I really rely on the individual, so it becomes a really individual exploration. And so maps are, like any map, useful in a general kind of way, but once we're actually in the territory, we need to abandon the map, and we're really relying then on the firsthand experience of the meditator. So I really use Yoga Nidra as a tool to help them investigate their own map and create their own body mapping. And two people might have very different body mappings, but they're experiencing similar states. I like the idea of Yoga Nidra and meditation in general as a very individual, specific practice. That's helping a person really develop their own firsthand understanding. So they're free, in a way, of authorities. They're free of outside externalized maps. They're really mapping their own self.
Mm-hmm.
And what about a list of emotions that come as pairs? Is there something like that? Or is it just not possible to really enumerate all the emotions in the pairs?
Well, over the years, I've developed pages and pages of emotions and their different tones and descriptions that people have given me, and I use them as kind of catalytical thoughts when I'm teaching, so I might bring them up as representative examples. But I'm always interested in the individual, and like I'll ask a person, so what's the emotion you're experiencing? Where do you experience it in your body? And if you were to describe it, how would you describe it? And I get such unique descriptions, it's hard then to create a kind of a rigid map. So I have maps, but I must say I abandon them the moment I really start working with an individual. They're useful for teaching a group of people some of the core concepts, but when we get to the actual individual, I think it's a very highly specific practice. And so when I'm actually giving trainings, I'm teaching people how to deliver yoga nidra to groups, but I'm also teaching them how to work with individuals. The way I'd like to teach yoga nidra meditation is if I'm teaching to a group, everybody in the room should feel like they're developing their own particular style of yoga nidra, so they've really made it their own. I think that's the challenge of being a teacher.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be, you know, the challenge of personalizing with such variety. With that, I'm going to bring our third panelist, Dashama, who is a yoga and fitness expert with 10-plus years in the industry, training, coaching, and consulting clients and companies. She's a creative dynamo in her field. She's been a multimedia producer with numerous videos, books, and DVDs that have been featured in Oprah, Walmart, and, you know, Barnes & Noble and Target. It's widely available in some of the leading retailers. She's a YouTube phenomenon with her online channel receiving more than 8 million views. So with that, Dashama, you are online, and you can ask your questions with Dr. Miller.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm really grateful to be here. It's such synchronistic timing of the topic, actually, Dr. Miller. And it's interesting, recently I've been having this online cyber stalker that's schizophrenic, and it made me think about yoga nidra and how potentially it may be able to help people with that type of mental disorder. My own mother had schizophrenia as well, and so I understand to some extent this mental disorder, but, you know, it's just, I've been dealing with this now online because this cyber stalker, he is just like obsessed with me, and it's very interesting. So it's coming up a lot of things from within myself, but also I just wanted to ask, have you had any experience with that type of patient with mental disorders of that nature, and potentially what could yoga nidra do to help that type of individual?
I have, actually. I worked in a psychiatric unit years ago and utilized the principles of yoga nidra with the patients that I was working with. I was in a psychiatric ward with patients who were schizophrenic, actively psychotic at times, and often called in to work with an individual who was agitated or having a moment of extreme difficulty or beginning to go into a psychosis. And I found that the underlying principle of yoga nidra really has stood me in good stead. The underlying principle behind yoga nidra is what I call welcoming. I could go into the Sanskrit words, but I call it the principle of welcoming and radical acceptance. We're really accepting the moment just as it is, and then looking at what is our particular perfect, I would say, response to that moment that gives way to a sense of harmony within ourselves and the world. So when I'm working with someone who's deeply disturbed, like schizophrenic, or psychotic, I'm really trying to enter into their experience and having them describe to me the world that they're in a way, joining them. There's a wonderful saying that two people can't occupy the same space. If you do, one needs to leave. And I found when I really invited someone who was going into a psychotic episode to really describe to me their experience, they often, in a way, became more integrated and, in a way, talked themselves somewhat out of their psychosis, depending on how severe it was. So I find if we can really meet the person and that they feel met, it can often have an integrating effect on them, because so many people in a schizophrenic moment or a psychotic moment feel isolated, alienated. They feel a sense of deep separation, and by their feeling someone is actually hearing them and listening to them, it can have a deeply healing effect. That said, I well appreciate also that sometimes the most effective response that we need to have to another person is to put borders or boundaries around them so that they're protected and we're protected. So when I think of a perfect response, that doesn't preclude setting boundaries, borders, a sense of differentiation. But I still would say that can include this deep core sense of welcoming, where we truly know that the other person isn't other than ourselves. And so our intervention with them really is based on love and kindness and compassion. And yet sometimes we do need to set limits, and we need to set borders and boundaries to protect ourselves and people around us or the person themselves. But short statement to your question was, yes, I feel this can be a very effective tool amongst other tools when we're working with someone like a stalker or someone who's disturbed, unbalanced. But we need, as always, to go in slowly, carefully, and make sure that we're respecting our own borders and boundaries each step of the way. But I love this principle of welcoming. It's really based on a deep understanding that every moment arrives with its perfect response. And so in every situation we find ourselves in, Yoga Nidra is helping us discover that perfect response within ourselves, that when we engage it, we feel a sense of harmony and rightness, and it gives way, I think, to a sense of harmony with the world around us. The root of the word dharma is actually a beautiful Sanskrit word, rutta, which means to be in total harmony with the universe. And I think when we're really in touch with ourselves through these healing practices of yoga, we're living our dharma, where we really do feel connected to the world around us. And I think then the people we interact can at some level feel that we're not trying to change them or hurt them. They can sense that there's an underlying love in our relationship with them.
I have another question, if you don't mind. So some people have suggested that I would attract a schizophrenic stalker because my mother was schizophrenic, and I felt like that was something my soul needs to reconcile within. And I wonder, just from your perspective, because I find you to be quite in touch with the true essence of yoga and the spiritual path, what is your perspective on that type of response?
I think life is a mystery. And I think as human beings, we love to sit around the campfire and tell campfire stories. We don't really know what anything is. We don't know why we do what we do, and we don't know why another does what they do. We can tell a story about it, but I think ultimately it's a story. So the bottom line for me is to let go of those kinds of beliefs and really ask, what is my true action in this moment to this moment or to this person, and let go of stories. Our job, I think, is to let go of beliefs and really look squarely at the moment and try to feel what is the most appropriate action we need to take. Is it true that I need to be with a schizophrenic because my mom was a schizophrenic? I don't know. That's a belief. I don't know whether it's true or false, so I don't go either to trying to deny it or affirm it. I'm more interested in stepping back and asking, what do I need to do in this moment that by doing it, I feel a sense of harmony in my life, and it gives me a sense of harmony and relationship to the entire universe and world. I think ultimately that's what our practices of yoga are leading us into, that we really don't know what anything is, and we're really willing to face the mystery squarely and put, in a way, our rational mind aside and really just meet the moment right in its entirety.
I agree. I really appreciate your response. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dashama. I hear some silence on the line. I'm hoping Sharib is still present. And that we're still on. And
yes, I was a little muted for a little bit, so to prevent any background noise. But I was
going
to say,
like,
I'm going to invite.
They don't like silence in radio shows.
My office can be a little noisy. I want to invite our last panelist, Carol, and I know we are running a little bit above our usual schedule on the call. Carol is. Has spent 25 years as a special educator and outdoor enthusiast. She found yoga in 1998 after an injury, and the practice felt like a natural fit in exploring the physicality of asana as well as the connection of the self to the natural world. That's really nicely put. After a life-altering diagnosis of multiple myeloma in 2003, yoga became a prominent part in Carol's healing process. And she completed a 500-hour yoga teacher training program with an emphasis on therapeutics. And she has now founded a yoga for cancer care, where she's offering cancer care classes and restorative classes as part of her activities. And she's also an assistant instructor for teacher trainees at Yoga Loka. So with that, Carol, I'll invite you to have a quick discussion with Dr. Miller. So, Carol, are you on air?
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much, Dr. Miller. I love your work, and I really battled for a long time with my cancer treatments and all of that, and the your recordings, the meditative from the Meditative Heart of Yoga, they were like, that was like the only thing I could do for about 4 years, and I would do it morning and night, and I have to say it was life-changing for me to be able to find that connection and move beyond my own suffering and all of that. So thank you for your work. And so I'll be brief here. So since I do teach yoga for cancer care, and we do work with the koshas in manners, you know, like you suggest in your yoga nidra process. And one of the things, oftentimes people who come to my classes are not experienced meditators and all that. And as our first panelist suggested, and yourself, it's difficult to delve into the emotional realm. So would you suggest like a process where, you know, 1 week become familiar with welcoming, you know, the senses of the body, and then move forward like that and sort of just skim the emotional
yes.
context for a while?
Actually, when I teach yoga nidra in a eight class segment or a 12-week mm-hmm. segment. I teach mm-hmm. it incrementally because, as you
okay.
say, a person could get deeply overwhelmed by going in too quickly. So
yes.
I do teach the intention, the body sensing, the breathing, the well-being, the inner resource first, and try to get that well established, and then wade into feeling tones first, then
right.
emotions. And I try to get people to rate their emotions so they take little ones first, big ones later.
Right.
That said, sometimes we don't have that luxury. In some of our research, we've given them the whole protocol from day one, and we've still found extraordinary results. So it really depends on the person, but I agree with you.
Right.
I think we need to take our time carefully because this is a very powerful intervention.
Yes, and some of the emotions that are jumping, especially in with trauma and cancer as part of a trauma experience, you know, those emotions are just like right up there and jumping out
right,
at
and
you.
I think it also begs the question of when do we give the intervention as a group to a group
mm.
and when do we really then need to work with the individual? Because if we're working with an individual, I'm really in relationship with them now, and so if deep emotions
yes.
are happening, I'm more able to help them with it than if they were just in a group.
Yes, great. And I'll ask two other brief questions. So the is the eye rest a short version, or is it like a single version, or
it's
is it available in...
It's a 10-step protocol, so we have it in its long version, but we have it in 35-minute, 18-minute, 5-minute
oh, okay.
segments.
Oh, okay.
And then I'm re-recording it, so we have each of the actual 10 steps in their own individual practices with multiple versions.
Great. So there's like a 20-minute version?
Correct.
Great. And that seems like a time frame that when I suggest to other people that's a workable time frame often instead of... You know,
absolutely.
40 minutes.
Yeah.
And my last question, if you were to recommend an optimum time of day to practice yoga nidra?
Oh, absolutely. Whenever we can do it.
Okay.
But, you know, practically in the morning if possible, because then we're not thinking, when am I going to get it in during the rest of the day? Or in the middle of the afternoon, we take a kind of a yoga nidra nap. But really, fundamentally, whenever we can do it, so we do it.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much, and I thank you so much for your work. And I advise it all the time to all of my students, etc.
Thank
cetera,
you, Carol. I really thank deeply appreciate what you said at
yeah.
the beginning and how it was
yeah.
serving you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I have. And sometimes I give a little welcome sign at the beginning, like a Doris Matt thing. And so I use your language. The welcoming is really a great language.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
Well, Dr. Miller, we have questions submitted to the audience, and I think we might have even a few people who want to come on air, but before I bring them on air, I will try to rush through a few of these questions. I know we are going a little bit above time. An interesting question that I'm seeing is that somebody's asked us that in your work with the military, you speak to people who have been to war and have experienced terrible, violent things. Do you ever feel that you're being dishonest when you say that there is a love center to all of us? Is there ever a sense of diminishing or speaking down to that experience? I thought it might be interesting to sort of address this.
Well, you know, I don't. I feel like the first thing that I want to show everyone is that there's something within them that's never been hurt, harmed, or damaged by the experience they've been through, and through the practice of yoga nidra, I feel I can help people find that very quickly so that they can really feel that sense of deep wholeness within themselves that's never been injured. I'm a pragmatic optimist. I really do feel we each and every person has this center in us. We're all trying to be happy, going about it our own unique ways. Sometimes they're destructive and sometimes they're more constructive, but I think as a teacher, my job is to really help a person locate that within themselves and then to really amplify it, nourish it as we go into the other aspects of the practice. But no, I don't think it's speaking down. I think we need to say it. It's a direct teaching that I think is very important.
Mm-hmm. I might have a listener. So person dialing, I think, via Skype. I'm going to bring you on air if you have a question to ask Dr. Miller. Are you there, person dialing with Skype number 111? If you would like to ask a question, we'll bring you on. You're on air right now. Looks like they might be having some difficulty. Another person with number 650, if you'd like to ask your question, we're bringing you on air right now.
Yeah. Hi, Sharad. This is Shweta here. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're on air.
Okay, All right, thanks a lot. Dr. Miller, it was very interesting listening to you all this while and the panelists as well. You mentioned that Yoga Nidra helps in developing well-being and wholeness and connectedness and non-separation. I was just wondering what goes on in our minds clinically, if you can throw a little bit of light on that. What happens to the... are there any studies which have... investigated the clinical parameters of stress, such as epinephrine and cortisol or reactive oxygen species?
We're doing that ourselves, and I'm also very much reading the literature on meditation that's coming out in the last number of years, so we do have a better sense of these approaches and what they're doing to the brain. I know when we're doing yoga nidra, meditation in general, certain parts of our brain, the limbic system that tends to hold us hostage to emotions, is being more regulated. The hippocampus is we're actually thickening the cortex in the hippocampus, which gives us more perspective and allows us to see a better sense of the consequences of our actions. We're also seeing how different centers, a recent research study that I was looking at was showing how the cognitive, the somatic, and other perceptual centers in the brain were all starting to link together and forming new connections while they were meditating in as short as three or four meditation sessions. So we do see a really dramatic change going on in the brain. Do we understand it? I don't think so. We're just seeing these consequences in the body. We see the lowering of cortisol. We see the deepening of serotonin and oxytocin and endorphins being exhibited during meditation. Total perceptual changes in our perception of pain. It's quite extraordinary, and we get them very quickly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. What is the minimum duration after which one starts seeing any positive effects of yoga nidra? You just mentioned that in only three or four meditation sessions, you start seeing lowering of cortisol and stuff.
We actually see them in the initial session. So many people come back to us after their first session, especially people who have sleep disturbances, and they say they got their first night's sleep in many years or months. We've seen people go into remission very quickly with pain or change their perception of pain after only one or two sessions. So we do see results right away with many people. Others, it does take some time to build the effect in. But I would say, you know, in four sessions of meditation, we're already seeing changes actually in the hardcore structures of the brain.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting to know. And I would really love to learn more literature from your lab or your studies. It was quite interesting to listen to you. Thank you.
Yeah, I do recommend, there's a wonderful book by a friend of mine, Linda Graham, called Bouncing Back, where she really goes into some of the neuroscience that's happening in these approaches. It is extraordinary to see that in as little as one to three or four sessions, we can have changes in the brain. And my understanding, after about 13 or 14 sessions, those changes actually stay in place. So we see a change over time that actually remains steady. The more we practice, obviously, the greater the change we're going to see.
Well, Dr. Miller, I think we're running out of time now, and I don't want to hold you or the panelists and the audience longer. I think we have had a very fruitful discussion.
And with that, I would like to thank you for taking the time out to discuss Yoga Nidra with us, and thank all the panelists for once again supporting the show and coming on to have a very interesting discussion, Dr. Miller. And the recording of the show will be available, and Priya will send you details on how to access the recording. And we hope to continue bringing on more experts like Dr. Miller and discussing yoga and its benefits for health and wellness. And would love your support in talking to students or your associates about the show, and hopefully they find it useful as well. Thank you all very much. We had a wonderful evening and look forward to having you all sometime again in the future on our next yoga panel.
Thank you, Dr. Shareeb. A wonderful show.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.